forums on Zenith Energy's tar sands oil export expansion. This event will supply project background, climate justice impacts, health and safety risks, and ideas for public action around Zenith's oil terminal. A variety of perspectives will be presented. Again, that's the Zenith's Tar Sands Oil Expansion Community Forum on Friday, April 5th, from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at the City of Portland Water Pollution Control Laboratory, 6543 North Burlington Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left-opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Let's get down to the news you're not supposed to know. Let's go to CBS, Central BS. Russian troops arrive in Caracas. Hide your children. They write Dateline Moscow. Venezuela is not going to become another Syria for Moscow, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov told a state-backed Russian newspaper. In an interview published this week, "We have nothing to hide," he said in response to a question about what Russian troops are doing in the once wealthy South American nation. Don't forget that it was once wealthy. Russian troops, fear. Don't forget the fear. Okay, here's the details. Two military planes carrying about 100 Russian personnel arrived in Caracas last week. How big is Caracas? 4 million? 5 million people? 100 troops? How are 100 troops going to defend 5 million people? Ask yourself that when you are discussing politically about the Russian personnel arriving in Caracas. This is a load. And not just of soldiers. The influx, CBS writes, which U.S. officials have told CBS News was unusual for its size, has fueled tensions between Russia and the U.S. that were sparked earlier this year as the two countries picked opposing sides in Venezuela's debilitating political crisis. The U.S., along with dozens of other countries, has thrown its support behind Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido. Now, I have to stop again. Interesting how they phrase it, isn't it? Along with dozens of other countries. Why is that? Because the OAS wouldn't back it. Because the U.N. wouldn't back it. Because it's illegitimate, because the U.S. picked the leader of another country and said, you're the leader now. If Juan Guaido had come into this town and participated in cutting the power off, he wouldn't be getting my vote. What he'd be getting would be on the end of a baseball bat. Because I have some respect for the people I live with. Anyway, returning to Central BS News, according to U.S. officials, two plane loads of Russian troops are sent to Caracas to support Maduro. The Kremlin claims, however, that they are sent to do maintenance work on military equipment Russia supplied to Venezuela several years ago. That's what the Kremlin claims. Now, it seems to me that's a pretty good claim. It seems to me 100 troops is about the right number to do maintenance on Russian military equipment. Because Venezuela has some Russian military equipment. They also have U.S. F-16s. Now let me give you something to compare that 100 Russian troops with. This is from Wikipedia. The WASP class is a class of landing helicopter dock amphibious assault ships operated by the United States Navy based on the Tarawa class with modifications to operate more advanced aircraft and landing craft. The Wasp class is capable of transporting almost the full strength of the United States Marine Corps Marine Expeditionary Unit and landing them in hostile territory via landing craft or helicopters, as well as providing air support via Harrier attack aircraft or F-35 stealth strike fighters. The Wasp class is based on the preceding design. The design was modified to allow for the operation of Harrier aircraft and landing craft air cushion hovercraft, making the Wasp class the first ships specifically designed to operate these. The main physical changes between these two designs are the lower placement of the ship's bridge in the Wasp class, yada yada. And each Wasp class has a displacement of 40,500 long tons, is 831 feet long, has a beam of 104 feet, and a draft of 27 feet for propulsion. Most of the ships, pardon me, for propulsion, most of the ships have steam boilers, and another one has turbines. And let's see, I'm looking for the good part here. Oh, here we are. The ship's company consists of 1,208 personnel. Now, if one of those ships shows up off the coast, and it might, that would be a significant escalation. 100 troops is not. So you're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. And continuing with the CBS arc, I want you to understand that there's a great deal of propaganda coming out, trying to get you ready to confront Venezuela right now. And CBS is a part of that. The New York Times is a part of it with an article that, if I recall correctly, was titled something about "Hello, fellow liberals. You know, you should support Guaido." There's been a lot of that stuff out. But returning to the article, Russia does have assets in Venezuela and close ties with the Maduro regime, but defense and foreign affairs analysts see the recent developments much more as a power play by the Kremlin, aimed more at goading the U.S. than defending the Venezuelan leader. Quote, harsh confrontation with Washington over Venezuela, according to the Kremlin's logic, boosts Russia's significance in the eyes of the U.S., end quote. That's according to Foreign Affairs Vladimir Frolov, talking to CBS News, quote, it's political theater and theater needs proper decorations, end quote. Now that is closer to the truth. I suppose that the Russians might have been a bit splashy in sending their 100 troops to the airfield. But again, it doesn't amount to squat and certainly would not defend Venezuela, even from a contra war by the U.S., which I think is looking more and more likely. A contra war and a sabotage war. Sabotage war going on using Stuxnet-type viruses and even direct attacks on transformers to knock out the power. And that's what's going on right now, and you're supposed to go along with it. And you're supposed to think that the U.S. confrontation with Russia is what it's all about. Well, that's war propaganda, is my point. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. If Russia really wanted to goad the U.S., then they would send their top-of-the-line air defense system, which is called a S-400 air defense system. It's the latest radar. It has a battery of different missiles, and it amounts to effective denial of air combat capability. That would really, really tick off the U.S. because that would, and you may have noticed that that's going on with Turkey right now because Turkey bought that system, which must have cost them a hell of a lot of money. And you may ask, why does the U.S. care? Because they weren't planning on bombing Turkey, right? Well, the intimidation of every other country on Earth is an essential part of U.S. imperial strategy. Intimidation is what it's all about, and that's why we have nearly 1,000 military bases around the world. And if someone buys a Russian air defense system, which is why we don't, you know, that aside from the nukes, is why we don't attack Russia directly, that air defense system works. If Turkey, well, Turkey has bought it, therefore the U.S. just can't bomb Turkey. You just can't do it. The thing even has anti-ballistic missile capability, and so the U.S., I mean, it's not that effective. The U.S. could still nuke Turkey. What an ugly thing to say. But no matter what, with that S-400 system sitting there, unless it is somehow sabotaged, the U.S. just can't do to Turkey what it's done to, say, Syria. This means that Turkey's got more latitude in how they respond to the world in general. It means they can just dismiss that threat. That's over. And boy, are they mad. Boy, is Washington mad about that. They hate that. That tells you who governs us. That tells you what they're about. And speaking of things that our governors, our rulers hate, Bernie Sanders is doing very well in running for president. As a matter of fact, he's the front runner. So the Washington Post and at least two other publications are starting to call him the Trump of the left. And the Washington Times is screaming why democratic socialism can't work. And you can find lots of articles that'll explain to you in various tones why you should never, ever think about socialism or about voting for Bernie Sanders. Don't do it. Just stop. And that's because they're terrified. So I want to pass on this information. The provenance of this is from, I found it on realclearpolitics.com, and it is actually a partial transcript from CNN with panelists Jake Tapper, John Avalon, Van Jones, and S.E. Cup discussing whether Senator Bernie Sanders is currently a front runner. Jake Tapper starts off saying, it's fair to say Senator Bernie Sanders, when it comes to polls, among the declared candidates, declared when it comes to polls, when it comes to fundraising, to the number of contributors, pardon me, when it comes to the dollar amounts, the average contribution is so small, without question. And this is Jake Tapper in the transcript saying, I think Bernie Sanders is the front runner, don't you think, among declared candidates. And John Avalon responds saying, that's the caveat you're making. Among declared candidates, you've got to say that's true for Bernie, but he benefits from a very broad field. Once you get Biden in that, then all of a sudden the top tier, Biden bests Sanders in most polls. I think Bernie has a very intense, devoted cadre. He's shaped the direction of a party in a very wide primary. Could his 20-25% of hardcore supporters be enough? Maybe. But the second Biden gets into the race, that statement is no longer operative. I think we know what this is about. These are brushback pitches against Biden. Can he handle a leftward drifting party? Not his first rodeo. Assuming he can, that statement is no longer operative. And then Jake Tapper responds to that. But I think it's interesting that he tries to frame things that way, saying that there's this very intense devoted cadre. But the fact is, Bernie has raised $18 million from small donations, an incredible feat. And he is, in fact, the candidate in front. In terms of dollar amounts, it's not that much. Obama and Clinton could raise $25 million at a pop, but they went to the corporations and got the big bundled donations. Bernie has gotten $18 million from people being enthusiastic about him, and that means people are enthusiastic about socialism. Did I say socialism? Socialism! Oh my God, socialism! So this is why they're talking about it. Although they try to talk about it as little as possible, and I can predict that the Bernie shutout of 2016 is going to be repeated this year and next, where they just try to talk as little as possible to show as little as possible about Bernie, because socialism. Oh my God! So returning to the transcript, Jake Tapper said we should point out that there's a lot of talk online now, especially among Sanders supporters, about the column by the Washington Post, Dana Milbank, who writes that Bernie is the Trump of the Democratic Party. Quote, fundraising and polls show many Democrats think the best answer to an angry old white guy with crazy hair, New York accent, and flair for demagoguery is, well, another angry old white guy with crazy hair, New York accent, and flair for demagoguery. It's not difficult to picture a scenario where Bernie captures the Democratic presidential nomination with the same formula that worked for Trump with Republicans in 2016, end quote. forgetting the hair and the New York accent and all that stuff, it was easy to look at the race and say lots of candidates, a guy with a strong following and 30% of the voters like Trump did in 2016, that Bernie could do that in 2020, win the nomination. Notice, now speaking for myself, the equation of a true demagogue stirring up people's race hatreds, stirring up patriarchy, stirring up all the ugliness that can possibly be found with Bernie Sanders, who simply speaks calmly about socialism. Because socialism, it's all the same. Socialism is hatred. Socialism kills babies. Whatever. Oh, by the way, the U.S. is very proud. It's come out in Al Jazeera that a premature baby in one of the hospitals, you may have heard me talking about how there was talk about earlier that it was sort of like the Al-Sabah family saying that Iraqis had stolen babies out of incubators and that sort of thing before the Iraq War. That propaganda that was rolling earlier when the failed coup attempt happened. But now, I'm sure Uncle Sam is very proud, and perhaps there can be a parade. A premature baby has died in a hospital in Caracas, and the lack of water and because of the power being on and off is being blamed in part. The baby wasn't doing well before, but probably would have done a heck of a lot better if the power had been on. So Guaido supporters can be proud. Could have a parade. Maybe we can make a nice papier-mâché float with Trump strangling a premature baby. I think that would be appropriate, because that's happened. And that just shows the kind of power that we have, and that'll show those socialists who talk about socialism. But returning to the transcript, people underestimated Bernie Sanders the whole time he was running against Hillary Clinton last time. That's in the words of Van Jones, who also said the guy got 47% of the vote against the entire Clinton-Obama machine in the year that Hillary Clinton should have had a romp, and he never stopped running for president. He just changed it to Medicare for All. I've been with Bernie, you know, this is Van Jones talking, in states and places where he's getting 2, 3, 4, 5,000 people to come out to hear him give the speech they've heard a million times. 9 months ago, 12 months ago, 16 months ago, he never stopped running for president. He has the biggest social media operation. He's got a bigger social media operation than some who do it professionally, so I'm just saying people continue to underestimate the insurgency in our own party. And S.E. Cup responded, that's like the only thing they have in common, can I just say. So that's all that I'll pass on from that. But you might want to memorize it, because you're not going to see a whole lot of coverage of Bernie Sanders on CNN. They're going to downplay him just as much as they possibly can. Now, returning to Venezuela, Venezuela's military has been placed on alert to preempt potential unconventional warfare tactics by the U.S., which aims to overthrow the government with attacks on public services, according to President Nicolas Maduro. Venezuela is demonstrating to the world that it is a testing ground for new cybernetic electromagnetic war weapons and a new war strategy, which is not the direct invasion or bombing by missiles, but the bombing of vital public services, Maduro said, admitting that with rolling blackouts, the situation in the country remains serious. This is from RT. The objective of the tactic is to destabilize the situation in Venezuela just enough to provoke internal clashes, the president said. He accused the opposition of engaging in criminal plans to take advantage of the scenario of chaos to assassinate him and other loyal supporters. Maduro also said there are plans by dissidents to attack military units. To confront these dangers, Maduro said he had placed the intelligence and counterintelligence bodies on highest alert. Similarly, the president called on the popular defense units, mobilized 51,000 units comprising 2.1 million volunteers to help the military deal with potential threats. So departing from that, that's part of the tactic, actually. He has now had to mobilize his volunteer reserves, and all of that is tremendously expensive. So that's part of making the economy scream. The talk of new cybernetic electromagnetic war weapons, etc., reminds me very much of the 1989 invasion of Panama, in which laser sights were used on rifles. Exploding bullets were experimented with. Corpses were pulled onto zinc magnesium sheets and burned into a reduced size, then put into special bags and thrown into the Jardín de la Paz, an extremely ugly, genocidal, and anti people of color invasion. It was largely directed at people of color who supported Noriega at the time in the El Chorrillo neighborhood. And the similarities there are kind of chilling. You know, what may happen. Because you can see that Guaido's camp, that is Elliot Abrams' camp, Trump and John Bolton's camp, is getting really frustrated. Things aren't going their way. And that's why I told you about the Marine carrier. That's something to watch for. I think they're called LHD craft. I may be wrong about that. There's a military designation, but they can carry up to like 1,800 Marines. And so when you hear talk about 100 Russians, that doesn't mean anything. That's scarcely a tickle. It's S-400, or there's no effective response from Russia. Russia might put a few troops in there and say, well, things would go easier with you on that if you'll give us a break on Crimea. You know, make a little tit-for-tat, like in the case of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Remove those Jupiter missiles from Turkey and, you know, we'll take ours out of Cuba. It may come down to something like that. But without the S-400, the U.S. can bomb Venezuela anytime it feels like it. They simply don't have the equipment because they don't have the money to put up a fight against U.S. Air power. They certainly do have sufficient popular defense units and top-of-the-line rifles to keep an invasion from actually taking hold in any effective way. That would be extremely ugly. So I'm hoping that in some way the U.S. can just give up on that and that the premature baby will be the last casualty, but, you know, there's no reason to expect that, so I'm sorry. That's the way our nation is. Ugly, imperialist, racist. America. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Now, thanks to Monica, U.S. government's refusal to confirm or deny it put an American journalist on a drone kill list. Julia Conley, staff writer in commondreams.org, says lawyers for an American journalist who believes he was placed on the government's infamous kill list warned Tuesday that the rights of all U.S. citizens are at stake if the country's drone assassination program is allowed to continue. The organization's comments came as part of a response to the U.S. government's attempts to dismiss a lawsuit regarding its use of the list. Reprieve is representing Bilal Abdul Karim, a journalist and U.S. citizen who claims he was repeatedly targeted and nearly killed on five separate occasions by drone and missile attacks in 2016 when he was reporting on the ongoing conflict in Syria. Karim joined an Al Jazeera journalist in 2017 in a lawsuit against the U.S. government demanding that the Trump administration remove their names from the kill list of potential targets for the U.S. drone program. Now this reminds me of something else. This is from Wikipedia. On September 17, 1973, 6 days after the U.S. supported Pinochet military takeover of September 11th, 1973. American journalist Charles Horman was seized by Chilean soldiers and taken to the National Stadium in Santiago, which had been turned by the military into an ad hoc prison camp where prisoners were interrogated and tortured. Many were executed. The whereabouts of Horman's body was presumably undetermined, at least according to the Americans, for about a month following his death. Although it was later determined that after his execution, Horman's body was buried inside a wall in the National Stadium, it later turned up in a morgue in the Chilean capital. A second American journalist, Frank Tarugi, met with a similar fate. Speaking for myself, Kissinger, Nixon, the CIA decided they couldn't afford to have journalists reporting what they were actually doing in Chile in 1973. Returning to Wikipedia, pardon me, all right, I've found it. Returning to Wikipedia, at the time of the military coup, Horman was in the resort town of Viña del Mar, near the port of Valparaíso, which was a key base for the American and Chilean coup plotters. U.S. officials speculated at the time that Horman was a victim of Chilean paranoia, but did nothing to intervene. It is unlikely that Horman would have been killed without a green light from the CIA, according to papers released in 1999 under the Freedom of Information Act. Efforts to determine his fate were initially met with resistance and duplicity by U.S. Embassy officials in Santiago. And speaking for myself, this was the basis of the Costa Gavras film Missing, which is much hated by official circles in the United States. Now, returning to the article about American journalists, an American journalist being targeted by drone killing. If the government manages to have the lawsuit dismissed, legal experts warn, it would allow the Trump administration and future presidents to secretly place any American on a kill list without telling them why, therefore stripping them of their constitutional right to due process. Jennifer Gibson, with the organization Reprieve, is quoted saying the government's assertion that it has a right to mark its own citizens for death based on secret information without affording them the legal protections offered by the Constitution is chilling. The right to due process has been a bedrock of the judicial system and one of the pillars that support a free society going back eight centuries to the Magna Carta. And pardon me, that last part was a quote from Tom Ermsweller and Will Eisenberg. Skipping ahead, the government responded that if those included on the U.S. kill list were to be informed and given a trial, national security could be jeopardized during the court case. Such a claim suggests that the right of the U.S. to operate its drone program trumps Kareem's and all Americans' Fifth and Fourteenth Amendment rights. Reprieve said, quoting Reprieve and the law firm Lewis Bach Kaufman Middlemiss, by invoking state secrets privilege in the context of designating a U.S. citizen for lethal action, the government seeks to shield itself from all inquiry into the process by which it acts as prosecutor, judge, jury, and executioner of plaintiff Bilal Abdul Kareem. The government, in its motion to dismiss, said that Kareem's due process rights would be satisfied simply by allowing him to present evidence that he has been wrongly placed on the kill list. And the government was under no obligation to respond. Reprieve rejected that argument, saying it was akin to, quote, limiting the accused to unilaterally contending that he is innocent of unknown charges in the hopes of persuading a silent, opaque coterie of government officials not to kill him, end quote. There's more to that. You can find it at commondreams.org. And it also reminds me of the no-fly list, which also requires that the citizen find out what the charges are against her or him, which cannot be done, and then present them, and then they pretend that they're just perfectly reasonable. But if you're on the no-fly list, you can't get off it effectively. All right. Now from Elizabeth Vos, writing in Consortium News, March 28th marks 1 year that WikiLeaks publisher Julian Assange has been illegally gagged from doing journalism, any writing that expresses a political opinion, even on his own treatment, after pressure from the U.S. on Ecuador. On this date in 2018, President Moreno of Ecuador, after talking with the Americans, imposed on Assange what Human Rights Watch legal counsel Dina Pocamper described as looking more and more like solitary confinement. Moreno cut off Assange's online access and restricted visitors to the Ecuador embassy in London, where Assange has had political legal asylum since 2012. And don't have time to go into that article, but they are making noises that they will soon expel him or make him so miserable that he will expel himself. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Don't forget that we're coming up on membership drive, and that I will have, for the first time, Press Watch t-shirts available. And I'm hoping that y'all will go for those. And I think that we will offer those for a $10 a month membership. I think that you'll like having it.
Shoot, I feel like I could have a pretty good weekend in Vegas with all that stuff.
You could. Wearing the Press Watch t-shirt from KBOO. Pledge drive coming up. And coming into the room now, Parafogring. So you'll want to stay tuned for that. We're going out to you via 90.7 FM and other frequencies in Cascadia from our big Eiffel Tower on the West Hills and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9:29. Coming up next is Fight the Empire with host Per Fogering, talking about Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. and the role of the deep state. At 10 on the Heather McCoy Show, Heather interviews Stephen Kijak, the director of Scott Walker, 30th Century Man. And at 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman talks to Pulitzer Prize and National Book Award finalist Christine Schutt about her latest story collection, Pure Hollywood. At 11:30, Black Book Talk co-hosts Emma Jackson Ford, O. Bill Hill, and Patricia Welsh discuss what's on their bookshelves this month, and listeners are invited to call in and share their current reads. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of PDX Short Docs on Sunday, April 14th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Mission Theater in Portland. PDX Short Docs is a two-hour program of Portland-related short documentaries created by local filmmakers. This year, there will be several virtual reality short documentaries included in the 6 to 7 p.m. part of the screening. There will also be a Q&A with many of the filmmakers. Again, that's PDX Short Docs on Sunday, April 14th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Mission Theater, 1624 Northwest Gleason Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire. My name is Per Fogering, and today is April 4th. Do you know what happened? You know what this day is all about? Well, it's the 51st anniversary of the Martin Luther King assassination, which doesn't get talked about a whole lot anymore. It's more